Good afternoon. How is everybody doing? It's freezing in here. My name is Megan Jernigan. I am a project coordinator with the Urban Indian Health Institute, and we are one of the original partners, so don't get confused because we are a division within the Seattle Indian Health Board, which is what you've been hearing earlier. I have absolutely nothing to disclose. I'm new to the Urban Indian Health Institute, so I couldn't be here if it weren't for the help and guidance of everybody that you see here, and then some. So thank you to everybody for helping me catch up. In my presentation today, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about UIHI and why we're here. We provide services to urban American Indians and Alaska Natives. I'm going to talk about the marriage between oral tradition and family history, which was sort of the guiding framework for our project. And then I'm going to focus in large part on the project process. So I have a lot of slides to go through. Bear with me. UIHI was established in 2000 as a division of the Seattle Indian Health Board by Ralph Aquara and Miley Tauli'i, who is taking a picture of me right now. It has grown fantastically since 2000. It's one of 12 tribal epidemiology centers with core funding from Indian Health Services, but we are the only tribal epi center that has a national focus, and our national focus is with the 34 urban Indian health organizations across 19 states in this country that provide clinical and referral services to all of the Indians that have left the rural parts of this country and come into urban and even suburban settings. And according to the census, that is approximately 70% of Indian people. We provide a number of different services to these 34 health organizations, including but not limited to program services, technical assistance, and we partner in a number of different community-based research initiatives. Whenever I get the opportunity to talk about this statistic, I take advantage of that because it's not very well known that almost 70% of Indian people live in urban cities, but unfortunately, the funding allocation has not followed us there. So that's a huge problem, and as a direct result, we see some pretty pronounced disparities in our population, disparities that you see in urban, rural populations as well. Alcohol-related deaths, 178% higher. Chronic liver disease, cirrhosis, diabetes, all kinds of chronic diseases. And I wish I had more time to talk about that, but I don't. For us, the theoretical framework of our project really sort of drew upon two theories, social learning theory, with the idea that we observe behaviors and then sort of recreate them. And the health belief model with the idea that if one perceives a behavior to be advantageous, then he or she is much more likely to perform that behavior. Our partnership approach with Genetic Alliance is, I think, sort of broad in the sense that we want to work together to improve the health and well-being of Indian people, but we understand that there are structural forces at play here. You saw Bob Fully Love yesterday in the video talk about how we don't exist in a vacuum. So you're only as healthy as the environment in which you live. And I think that that really informs our partnership. You heard Claudia talk about oral tradition, and it was a guiding force for us as well. Oral tradition is a very strong component of Native culture, and we thought that this would be an excellent opportunity to really draw upon that existing tradition, because embedded in oral tradition is a lot of really rich family health history, and I think that there needs to be a bridge there, a connection between the two, and that was sort of the idea behind the project. Ramona's story is like many other folks' stories. chronic disease in her family, which informs how she sort of moves forward. And I thought that that was a pretty powerful quote. Our objectives were fairly simple. We wanted to, at least in theory, we wanted to create a Native-specific family health history toolkit, the books that you see back there, and that you've heard the folks up here talk about. We wanted to evaluate whether or not this was relevant, whether or not this was accepted within this very small snapshot of 75 American Indians living in the Pacific Northwest. And we wanted to evaluate whether or not the distribution and the use of this toolkit at all influenced health behaviors, but that's going to be a little bit more difficult to do. CBPR is, I think, the driving force behind most of the projects that UIHI takes on, with the idea that equitable partnerships are essential in all phases of research, that co-learning and building upon these resources that already exist within a community is absolutely essential, and that when we come to a community or when research is done in a community, it's done with the idea that you can't just pop in and pop out and expect to affect any sort of change, that things have to be sustainable. And then the multiple voices, you know, there's no one Indian experience, there's no one Indian perspective or lifestyle. So the idea that as many voices and as many diverse perspectives as we can get on our community advisory board, the better. So the community advisory board for us as a partner was an essential piece to this project. It forms every part of the project, truly. Well, they meet regularly. We have a meeting on the 12th of November to talk about our dissemination plans, and they guide the research process from start to finish, including adapting the toolkit and helping us interpret our data and approving of our dissemination plans. I'll skip over our methods slide. We've talked about it. This is an overview, and I'll sort of go into more detail about it. So, like everybody else, we adapted the toolkit. Our participants, 25 Indian families, defined as three or more, which, as you've heard folks talk about today, is a bit of a challenge, especially given the fact that eligibility criteria was between 18 and 65. So you don't often see, you know, a whole lot of you don't see family members living in one sort of city. People are living across the country, they're moving for education or for all kinds of opportunities. So that was an interesting challenge and one that we met. I think we've covered the rest of that. We used snowball recruitment, it made the most sense. Informational meetings, flyers, brochures. This is how we got the word out that this project is taking place. It's a really important project, and we'd love for you to participate. So our families were enrolled. We did the baseline survey. We distributed the toolkit after the community advisory board had done their part to revise it. And we distributed the follow-up survey after folks had a couple of months to sort of get familiar with the toolkit and talk to their families about it. Each family got a $150 gift card to Safeway. The challenges were interesting. There's a lot of inherent distrust, rightfully so, in Indian communities, especially around genetics. And there was even the idea that the survey was a genetic test. So that was a very interesting challenge that we had to overcome. We had some measurement issues. I mean, to the extent that we captured what we wanted to capture, I think that that's difficult to do, and it becomes much more obvious that these things were challenges once you're sort of knee-deep in the data analysis. So we also had some feedback from our participants about, you know, the Leichhardt scale and what's the difference between 2 and 4 or 6 and 8 respectively, and what's the difference between very good and good. So these are things to keep in mind as we move forward. There is, I think, a very strong overreaching challenge to this project, which is that at-risk messages are often quite threatening. And we didn't want to say, you're quadruply at risk for the following things, so get your act together and talk to your family about it. Because that would have been, I think, particularly challenging for folks. And what we know in the literature is that health messages are often not that persuasive for people for whom the issues are of the highest relevance. So how do we work around this? How do we address this? These are things that we're still sort of trying to figure out. We are one of, I think we're the only partner that's doing our own data analysis. We have the capacity to do it, the interest to do it, and we want to protect our people. So this is, these are some of many reasons why we want to do it. We're doing multi-level analysis, looking at the individual and the family level, predictors of toolkit use, the use and acceptability of the toolkit, and we're using Stata. You know, one of the most important things to keep in mind is that this project has the potential to shape and improve health. I mean, we do recognize that people and health don't exist in a vacuum, and there are a number of things that influence how people behave, what kind of opportunities they have, what kind of health access they have. So these things are almost impossible to control for, but they're important to know moving forward. We love the approach that we've formed with Genetic Alliance, this national project that that is conducted at the community level by community members and community organizations. It's a fantastic approach. It's feasible. I think it's preferable, and it's definitely the direction that I see us moving in the future. Thanks so much. Let me know if you have any questions. I'm out of time, sorry. Go ahead. I would assume that they are, but it's an assumption. I mean, I think that when we're talking about historically oppressed communities, communities of color, you might see very similar levels of distrust for research. So in that sense, it's probably very similar. But, you know, we are one of the only community partners that, I mean, Psoriasis Foundation, there are large differences between the two. So, you know, I think that we have different stories and different perspectives and probably have had a very different experience and a very different set of challenges. But overall, I would suggest that our challenges are similar in the sense that how do you get people to talk about and risk without threatening their image? So I think that that's a big challenge that as public health professionals we all face. Is there anything else? That's a great question. So that kind of feedback was captured as sort of qualitative data that we've not really analyzed yet. But our research staff is fully trained, obviously. But one of the things that they did was they had a script kind of that they were working on, which assured family members that this is not a genetic test. We are not taking blood. All we're doing is giving you a tool with which you can collect this kind of information, and we encourage you to share it with your provider. We hope that you do. But one of the strengths of the project is that you're getting people together to talk. And so we would reinforce that, our research staff would reinforce that with all of the program participants. And it was something that we saw at the beginning and we didn't see at the end. So I assume it worked. Okay, thanks so much.
So I think that one of the big questions that we had walking into this is, how can you make something like this sustainable? Because I think one of the big public health questions is, you know, we do community-based projects, and they're great, great, great projects. We will learn lots of lessons from them, but funding is limited, and how do you take lessons learned and, you know, bring them to other parts of the country, and how do you not, you know, make kind of these types of initiatives so expensive that, you know, a government agency will start funding something and then funding priorities will change and the programs dry up and disappear. And so I think that was one of the big questions we were trying to get at with this project. So there's, I think, a couple main areas that we could talk about a little bit, which, you know, lead to that. One is use of technology to do customizable resources. So allow there to be some basic tool that allows people to, for organizations or communities, to produce something that's relevant. I think another one is integration. So to take an existing service that's funded within a community or through other methods of funding, and to integrate health messages in a non-intrusive way. I think a lot of what these projects did is say, what is that non-intrusive way? How do you get health information in? What are the issues? And, you know, is this something that the community wants and needs? And I think then also the question of how do you have flexibility in what you're looking for if you're A, HRSA, the funding agency that worked with us on this, and is a cooperative agreement. They are one of the partners. But also in terms of the organization itself, how do you be flexible about what the point of the project is? You know, you're looking to do, you know, diabetes outreach, and you wind up with families that are worried about you know, stigma around some other health condition that they have, or health in general, or losing contact with their families because families are splitting up and moving around and not, you know, communicating this type of information anymore. What is the flexibility that we have as organizations to allow that health messaging to be what, and cooperation, I guess, to be what the people we serve need. So are there any questions around kind of those, you know, how to do those types of projects, or how to go the reverse way and take a project that people work on in their communities and turn it into something that could be shared with other types of communities? And or do any of our panel members have thoughts on that?
I'm sorry, I'm not going to answer your question, but I have a question.
Sure.
I hope it's okay to ask it.
Yeah. Sure.
This is the part of the presentation we didn't hear. The part that we did hear is wonderful and interesting and important. It's just that I wonder, what's the outcome that you're looking for? And are we sure that we did no harm so that we should be disseminating it to all these other parts?
Right. So I think that that there's a couple questions in there, and I think that we can split them up. But one of a process question is, what are we doing in terms of taking feedback and integrating it into the tool? So this is a project.
That wasn't, I'm sorry, but that wasn't it.
Okay.
What's the outcome that you're looking for?
So I think we're all looking for, you know, a range of outcomes. One of them is that people talk about health or feel there's that to reduce the stigma around health by making it something that people talk about. So one of the things that you said is a question that comes up for me all the time, which is this kind of idea of do no harm. And where does the boundary of do no harm relate to when you're talking about people's perceptions around health? So yes, we don't want the healthcare system to do no harm in terms of giving people, you know, information that they don't know what to do with. But at what point do we need to ask the question, how do we need to reduce health stigma in the first place? How do we need to get people feeling more comfortable to talk about health information and not stigmatize other people in their family and, you know, others around that information? Where does the do no harm reach to in terms of not getting people to talk about health information? I think it's a big question. A lot of times, you know, we say, you know, we don't want to give out information without an explanation of what people should do with that information. I think that's a big question of this project. How do we give people tools to do with that information something useful for their lives? But there's also the question of, you know, there's a baseline problem in health in that there is this stigma around that health information in the first place that makes those harms even greater when we give information as a healthcare provider, or when data gets out that we don't want to get out, or when there's a, you know, a system such as a newborn screening system that provides information. Half of the problem is that there's this that stigma that exists that can be so debilitating to families. So how do you even look at that baseline question of, you know, half the harm is kind of the social problems around health and the social stigma that exists, and how do we even work to kind of resolve some of those issues on a baseline level? What do some of the other panelists feel about this issue, though, of what the goals are for you?
We at the Urban Indian Health Institute felt like from the very beginning of the project, that was in mind. And so that's why we negotiated a data sharing agreement that ensured that the data belonged to us, to the community. And we will only disseminate the information once the community advisory board decides what to do with it and how to interpret it. So it's an important question, it's a very good question, and it's something that I think all the community partners had in mind. As far as knowledge of family history, you know, the measures in the baseline and the follow-up questions are about knowledge. So I would assume that's what one of the outcomes we're looking to measure is. What is the baseline knowledge around family history? What happened with that knowledge after the toolkit was disseminated? And the surveys don't capture any disease-specific information. So we're not collecting information from folks that says, here's what diabetes in my family is like. It's all about knowledge. And so I think that's a really great question, but I think the survey was sort of designed with that in mind.
What about that provider card or something? Is it a provider services thing where you take it to the provider? Mm-hmm. Is there any record of what's happening with that?
There is a question on the follow-up survey about, did you complete a family provider card? But it also asks questions about whether or not that was relevant. We will never see the provider cards. That's for the families and their physicians or their traditional health leaders, whoever, that they go and see. That's not something that we have access to. That's for the families.
Part of the project, too, one of the partners we're working with is Intermountain Healthcare. And they did an initial survey with providers to help inform that kit, and they'll be publishing a paper soon that actually asked providers, what information do you want to see in family health history? What information do you need? And what do you currently use that information for? So though that information is not published, we did use that information to create that toolkit. And then they are also doing, as part of their project, the through their patient portal, and then doing surveys with follow-up with provider systems to say, did people come in with this family health history information, and essentially, how did it go? So we are doing that study now. There have been some other studies, so a lot around the realm of family health history, this is not the only study that's been done. There have been studies on some use of risk assessment and how that's been done. There's some on providers and using that information. But I think there's a lot more work that needs to be done. HRSA has a grant guidance out right now for working with pediatric care providers and family health history information and electronic health records and how to use that information in a better way as well.
I'm actually working on the physician end of this, trying to develop a physician family history tool with a patient component. And so one thing we've been concerned about is causing more anxiety on the patient level and what to put on the patient form. The researchers for the provider at the back, did you have any patient concerns from looking at this and then trying to evaluate their risk in a way that was
convenient? Sure. I don't know. Did anyone get any feedback on that?
Our community find that useful, the provider card. In preliminary analysis.
I think the provider card is great. I was just curious about whether if patients were trying to sort out the information that was provided from the back, it seems like this is the kind of thing that we were worried about.
Okay.
Having this would, raise anxiety with our patients. So we can figure out
okay.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Are those different for each community, the provider card?
I don't think. I think the only thing that might be different is a condition or two.
So it is after 2:00, so we don't want to keep you, but if you want to continue the conversations, I think all of us are happy to answer any more questions. And please, please take the materials on the back table. Thank you all for being here.
Thanks so much.